Just a note before we start, this episode has a swear word that you'll hear early on, so please keep that in mind while listening. Tanner Davenport has loved country music ever since he was a kid.
Nashville is home for me. I grew up right next to a farm. Like, my next-door neighbor was a legitimate farmer, and I would spend my weekends outside kind of like talking to the horses and the cows on the weekends because I'm an only child growing up. Like, I don't have any siblings, and so there was a lot of solitude growing up, and so my right-hand person essentially was music.
Tanner listened to artists like Jody Messina, Leanne Womack, and The Chicks. Their music struck a chord with him. He would hear these songs about dirt roads and loneliness, and he would feel like the details were pulled directly from the world that he lived in. But then, in 2016, Tanner had an experience that really shook his relationship to country music. Tanner was a few years out of college at this point, working at a Christian radio station in Nashville. And he had heard rumors that something big was going to go down at the 2016 Country Music Association Awards.
Welcome to the 50th annual CMA Awards. What a beautiful sight.
Take a look. The CMA Awards are like the Oscars of country music. And Tanner had managed to score tickets. Just before the show started, he checked his phone, and he saw that Beyoncé had arrived on the red carpet. Tanner had been a fan of Beyoncé's music for years, and that night she was there for a surprise performance with The Chicks, then known as the Dixie Chicks. They performed Daddy Lessons, which was one of Beyoncé's first songs to veer into country music.
Everybody get up on your feet.
At this point, that's where I lose my mind a bit, in front of all of these complete strangers who do not know who I am. The one thing that I do know for sure is that everyone around me is white, and I'm the only black person. So I'm like, okay. So she comes out. I'm losing my mind, screaming. Daddy Lessons is on, all this kind of stuff. And I'm having the best time ever.
He held me in his arms, and he taught me to be strong.
And then probably into the chorus, going into the second verse, I hear a woman in front of me. Because she is standing up as well, and she says, someone needs to get that black bitch off the stage. And I'm kind of like frozen at this moment, because I'm kind of like trying to come to terms with, like, did this really just happen? Did I hear this woman just say that? Is she saying this about Beyoncé? Is there any, like, what's going on right now? I was so confused.
That performance by Beyoncé and the Chicks was controversial. People started posting online, hashtag boycott CMA. One famous country artist reportedly walked out of the CMAs in protest. Following the backlash, there were reports that the CMAs deleted any mention of the performance on its social media and website. A CMA spokesman refuted those claims a few days later and said in a statement that the performance was a, quote, highlight of the evening. But the 2016 performance reignited conversations about race and gatekeeping in the country music industry. And Tanner still thinks about his experience at the show a lot. Now he's the co-director of the Black Opry, an organization that helps elevate the work of Black and Brown country artists.
I, from that moment, had always kind of thought to myself, like, man, I wish there was a way in which this was not the reality for me and for other people. Because at that moment, I think that was my first experience in a country music space feeling super unwelcome and uneasy. And I wanted to find a way in which, like, how can I exist in this space and not feel this way again? Because immediately, anytime that I would go or attempt to go to any country-themed anything, that moment kind of would always replay in my head. Like, are people looking at me in that same way?
On Friday, Beyoncé released her new album, Cowboy Carter. It is a sprawling 27-track epic that jumps from country music to gospel to opera. In a post on Instagram, Beyoncé wrote that the album, quote, was born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed, and it was very clear that I wasn't. Her latest foray into the country genre has already gotten a lot of attention. Texas Hold'em, one of the first singles off the album, got nearly 20 million streams and topped the country music charts in the first 4 days after it came out. We went to Beyoncé to request an interview to talk about all of this. Shockingly, she did not respond to our request. But her turn to country music has set off another round of debate about the marginalization of Black musicians in the genre and about who gets to define what country music even is. And so we wanted to talk with someone who understands the ins and outs of the industry and could speak to the significance of Beyoncé's country music moment.
I think everybody thinks that if you move to Nashville and if you just write songs and like everybody just came and played the Bluebird a couple times and then they all got signed and everyone became famous. And like, that's not it at all.
Reese Palmer has been in the country music scene for a long time. And she's one of the few Black women, along with Beyoncé, to ever make it onto the Billboard country charts.
What Beyoncé did, I can't say this enough, is really rare. That was like some Haley Comet type stuff. Like, because that doesn't happen to anybody.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers, and it is Sunday, March 31st. Today, we are bringing you a bonus episode to talk about this big moment in country music. We'll be speaking to Reese Palmer about her experience in the industry, the forces that define country music, and about whether Beyoncé's turn to country could help other Black country artists break through. Just to get started, if you could introduce yourself and say who you are and what you do.
My name is Reese Palmer, and I am a singer, songwriter, and also the host of Color Me Country Radio on Apple Music. And I am a mom, maker of sandwiches, and lover of shoes.
I love all of those things. On Color Me Country Radio, Reese highlights the contributions of Black, Latinx, and Indigenous artists. And she herself has been making country music for almost 2 decades. Reese has opened for the Eagles. She has opened for Taylor Swift. And in 2007, her song Country Girl reached the Billboard country charts. At that point, it had been 20 years since a Black woman had last charted a country song. I'm curious, why did you decide to become a musician, and what in particular made you gravitate toward country music?
So I have been a singer for as long as I can remember, meaning like I just constantly sang. I remember my mom gave me my baby book when my parents moved out of the family home, and my 2-year-old checkup, the doctor says, healthy baby sings constantly. And so music life kind of chose me. Country music was always a part of our listening in the house. Both my parents are from the South. Mm-hmm. And so they grew up listening to country music. Both my mom and dad are from Georgia. And so, like, that was a part of our listening. It was Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton and Patsy Cline, along with Phoebe Snow and Chaka Khan and Aretha Franklin and Lionel Richie. And so that's just what I grew up listening to. And I loved the stories. I loved the stories.
Like, what do you mean by the stories?
Well, I love the fact that, like, for example, Dolly Parton's Coat of Many Colors.
So with patches on my britches and holes in both my shoes.
And I just love that because it was tactile to me. Like, I could taste it, I could smell it, I could see it. And that always kind of, that not kind of, it appealed to me and appealed to the budding writer that I was becoming as a kid.
So one of the reasons that we are talking today is to talk about Beyoncé a little bit, this turn to country music.
Beyoncé? No.
Yes, shockingly. And you know, wanting to kind of discuss that in the context of your own work as a country musician. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that Beyoncé is not the typical example of what happens when a woman, and especially a Black woman, tries to break into country music. So before we kind of turn to talking about her, I'd be curious to hear more about your experience, what it's been like for you being a country music artist, trying to make an impact and get your music heard.
So for me, the journey really began the summer after my senior year of high school. I was a young Black girl, and so everybody wanted to be Destiny's Child, ironically. Everybody wanted to be Beyoncé and be Lauryn Hill and be Mariah Carey and that sort of thing. So I left home that summer to record my first demo, and while we were in New York recording this pop demo, my managers asked me, well, what are you always writing in your notebook? Like, you're always writing. And I said, well, I was kind of embarrassed because, you know, I told you earlier, my influences, a lot of my influences were country, and it didn't seem weird to me until I got out into the world and I realized that, like, I didn't see other Black people singing country music or playing country music. And so I kind of tucked that away for myself. And they asked, so fast forward, they asked me, what are you writing? And I said, I'm writing a song for Reba McEntire. And I totally prepared myself to be, you know, ridiculed by these two women. And they were just like, Reba McEntire, sing it. And so then I sang it and they were just like, Reese, you're a country singer. Like, this is a country song. And I'm really grateful for them giving me permission to be that. And so that completely changed course of what we were recording. And so we met with my first producers and recorded my first demo and started taking meetings in Nashville.
And what was their reaction in those meetings? Like, were they as encouraging in terms of like, yeah, like, of course Black women can sing country and be country music stars?
Of course not. No, there was no. I'll say this: it was an interesting exercise because, again, this is the early 2000s. By this point, I'm 19 years old, and they would take my demo in sight unseen. So there were no pictures attached, no name even, and so a lot of times, oh, this is great. No, we definitely want to meet her, and you know, then the questions start coming up. Well, you know, maybe it needs more development. Maybe we need to figure out how to develop an audience for her. You know, we just want to make sure that the audience finds her relatable.
I mean, to me, that sounds like we're concerned that she's not white and that white people who listen to country aren't going to want to listen to her.
Yeah.
And how did you feel getting those kinds of reactions?
It was hurtful. I mean, the thing is I think I can speak for most Black people when I say none of us ever want it to be race for the reason why we don't get something. And so, or why something doesn't happen for us. I don't immediately go to race. And so I tended to personalize it and make it into, well, you're going to have to become a better singer. You're going to have to become a better writer. You're going to have to become a better performer. And I internalized all those things. Well, obviously, you need to lose weight. You need to look better. You need to do something different with your hair. You need to wear something different. And, you know, and that takes a toll on you mentally rather than just being like, I can't change the fact that I'm Black. I can't change the fact that I'm a woman, but I can change all these other things. So I just worked really hard for years to change those other things. And, you know, I was in Nashville for 7 years before I got signed. I had Faith Hill cut a song of mine, Reba McEntire cut a song, all these things. And it was amazing. It was great. But I was watching as all my peers, my white peers, were being signed and, you know, having all these great successes. And I was still playing writer's rounds and, you know, trying to get noticed. And I just noticed anytime I was brought into the room after my work was brought into the room, suddenly it became problematic. And so I was just like, I can't overlook the fact that this is what's happening to me.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Like, what is the element? And going back to Nashville, like, what do you think the element is in the country music industry that has made them kind of resistant to seeing Black people as important contributors to country music?
Well, Martine, I've thought about this question a lot, especially this month. And I think it's a twofold thing. I think, number one, it's a lot easier to market white men to the audience because this is what country music has been sold as being. You don't have to think about it. Whereas, and it's even easier to market a black man because it's been done before. There is a blueprint for that. The only thing there is not a blueprint for is a black woman. And I think also that there's this assumption that a white audience wouldn't accept a black artist.
And do you think that's true? Like, do you think that's kind of founded, that white audiences, white country audiences are kind of resistant to, like, being open to black female artists?
I think I would have believed that until the streaming era. And I look at so many of the art, because I'm a person that studies charts. I like numbers and facts because you can't argue numbers and facts. And you look at like the streams of a Tanner Adele or a Camille Parker or a Britney Spencer or Chapel Hart. And you see the numbers that they're doing on streaming just on their own, like without any major push or anything, just organic streams. Somebody likes it. Because these songs are getting millions and millions of streams. And none of them are being played on country radio currently. And none of them, you know what I mean? And like, so there is a disconnect somewhere. I don't think that the audience at large is against a black artist. I just think the industry has not put any real thought into how to market them and how to gain a crossover audience. Because obviously a black audience exists. Otherwise, we, the black country artists, would not exist.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about your success for a second, because you are one of eight black women, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of eight black women who has ever been on the country music Billboard charts, which is both a big achievement, but also, you know,
terrifying.
Ask the question, like, why haven't there been more? Or, you know, why is it that you are still kind of establishing this blueprint? But what has it been like for you to find a space for yourself in country music and to really start to get that kind of recognition and success?
So 2007 was when I charted, and it was with my song Country Girl. And we charted two more songs after that, a song called Hold On To Me and No Air. And my journey was an interesting one because, like, for example, I wear my hair natural. I always have since I was 17. And that was a big thing, like a really big thing. And like,
I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and relate deeply to that.
Oh, my God. Like, I sometimes, as a party trick, when I have people over, I will show them the original promotional pictures that we took because I had a wig on in them, like a long, straight, like curl, bumped ends wig. And it looks insane. And, you know, we had battles over love interests in music videos, whether I should be with a white man or I should be with a black man and that sort of thing. And so, like, if you see my music videos, I'm just wandering around alone because there was nobody. Because
like, we can't figure this out. It's too complicated.
Right. Yeah, just let
just
her
go
walk
in the woods somewhere.
Fine.
We'll take some videos, sing her song.
Roll around the sand. It'll be fine. So, you know, it was always like that kind of stuff. But it was, you know, I don't want to paint it as it was all terrible and it was all awful. Like, I got to fulfill dreams that I had been dreaming about since I was a kid. I got to play the Opry. I got to open for the Eagles. I opened for Taylor Swift when she was like 15. But yeah, it was a really interesting, fun, confusing, infuriating moment.
Well, that seems like a good place to come back to Beyoncé. I'm curious, when you first heard Beyoncé's new country songs, that's Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages, what did you think? What was your reaction?
So I have to say this. Beyoncé doing a country album was the worst kept secret in the business.
So you knew this was coming for a long time.
We knew years ago because she had talked about it and there were whispers that's what she was working on and that sort of thing. So I knew it was coming, but, you know, no one knows when it's coming with Beyoncé. She's kind of like a ninja. I was at a friend's show and I had my phone turned off. And so when I turned my phone off, the text messages were coming. I thought somebody had died. Like, there were like at least 20 text messages from people. And everybody's sending me the link to this thing. Like, have you heard it? Have you heard it? So I got in my car and turned it up and listened.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down.
So, yeah, I thought, okay, it's time. We're in it now. Like, that's that's what I thought.
After the break, Riecy Palmer breaks down whether or not Beyoncé's turn to country could change the industry. We'll be right back. In understanding Beyoncé's decision to make a country album, I think it's also important to understand the context of the Country Music Awards and the sense that Beyoncé has not been welcome there in the past. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you see that playing into what you imagine is kind of big about this moment?
I felt a mixture of a lot of things. I'm going to be completely candid here. It wasn't directed at Beyoncé, but it was just like, I've always had an issue with the industry in that they are very quick to invite people of color outside of the genre to come and be a part of it, but not as welcoming to people that are actually working in the industry, in the genre.
And oh, interesting.
So you'll see Beyoncé and Jennifer Hudson and John Legend before you'll see Mickey Guyton or before you'll see me or like any of Miko Marks or any of the other women that have been working in this industry for years.
And just to be clear, I mean, that to me feels like an interesting and important distinction, that there's this narrative that, you know, Beyoncé has been kind of wronged by the country music industry in the past. And not, you know, I think plenty of people can feel that and that they're justified in feeling that, but that there's also the sense of, well, actually, it's been a lot easier for Beyoncé to break into country music, you know, quote unquote, break into. Because she's a star, because she's, you know, she's Beyoncé, but that in many ways, like, she's not experiencing the challenges that Black country music artists have been experiencing for years.
Yeah, I think those two things can be true at the same time. I think that, yes, she did face racism, because if you look back at that film, like, of the actual performance, there were some people that were feeling it and getting their life, and then there were other people that were just, like, just appalled and angry. And I know people who were in the audience that heard people saying racist things in the audience. So it happened. It's true. Like, that's, like, I'm not here to negate that. I will say exactly what you said is right. At the same time, the things that are happening for Beyoncé are singular to Beyoncé. Like, the whole chart situation.
And well, what do you mean by the whole chart situation?
So there's been this narrative that she was kept off of country radio. Now, again, two things can be true at the same time. Are there radio stations that are just hell-bent on not playing Beyoncé? Yes. Do I think that country radio deserves the benefit of the doubt? Most times, no. But I will say that Beyoncé was able to do in 4 days. 4 days. What typically takes the average, even just white country artist, at least 10 weeks to a year to achieve. For us to get Country Girl into the 40s, I was on radio tour for almost a year.
Wow.
And I'll even compare myself. So, like, take myself out of the equation. Lainey Wilson. Lainey Wilson is arguably one of the biggest women in the format right now. She's on television. She's won ACMs, CMAs, Grammys, all of that. Her last single took 10 weeks to do what Beyoncé did in 4 days. And so there is power and there's money and there's all kinds of stuff. And so while I don't want to negate her experience and her personal feelings, in the same sentence, what happens to Beyonce happens to just Beyonce. Like, that is not the experience of the rest of us. And that's just what it is. That's just the truth.
I'm curious if you feel that Beyonce's, like, entrance into country music has started to help change the definitions around, like, what country music is, both in terms of, like, who is singing it, who is writing it, who is playing the music, but also in terms of, like, what are the qualities of country music? Like, do you think that there is a kind of redefining of, like, what makes a country song a country song?
Well, I think that country music goes through this, like, every 10 to 20 years. Starting back in the 50s when country decided that it was going to try to get away from its hillbilly, its image as hillbilly music, and sort of become this thing they called countrypolitan. All the pain's away. Until now, I'm down to hurt once a day. People hated it in the beginning. They're like, oh, this is too slick. I don't like this. This isn't the music that I grew up listening to. And then fast forward, you get to the 70s. Like a rhinestone cowboy. And everybody's like, oh, this is really bad. I don't like this. This is terrible. This isn't the country music that I grew up with. 80s, 90s, 2000s, same thing. And so now we're at a moment where, again, we're saying country, this is even without Beyonce, country music is losing its identity. What is this? And, like, artists are using trap beats behind their songs. And so country music is going through yet another metamorphosis. And I think there's room, I personally think that there's room in the genre for, you know, the songs about Applebee's. And there's room for the more traditional stuff. And so I think one of the things that makes me excited about this moment with Beyonce is that she showed that you don't have to just use the Nashville producers, the Nashville musicians, the Nashville songwriters. You can make your own country music wherever you are. You asked also, like, what do I think country music is? Alice Randall, the songwriter and writer, she's the first Black woman to co-write a number one country song. She says in her book, My Black Country, there are three markers of country music. And I think this is a great definition. It's God, family, and nature. Some country songs have all of them.
Not like banjo, guitar, and, you know, like a certain type of singing. It's
the subject matter. And, like, that's what she thinks of as country music. Now, there are markers that you hear and you're like, that's country, banjo, fiddle, you know, a certain picking style of the guitar and that sort of thing. And of course, the twang, like, all those things are markers of a country song. But I think the subject matter is a lot more of what makes something country than necessarily the way the track sounds.
Do you think that the attention on Beyonce and this new album and this, like, shift to country, that it is going to bring more of a spotlight to country music more generally and to artists like you who have been trying to do country music in a different way for a while?
Yes and no. I think it's a lot of pressure to put on Beyonce to to be like, come in and swoop and save us all. Like, I think this is a good moment for people to explore, and I hope that they will. And I've noticed in my own streaming numbers that someone is doing some exploring because, like, it's gone up in the past month. But
Past month.
Yeah, just in the past, since the announcement of the record and the two songs dropped, like, yeah, I've definitely seen a spike. So thank you, Beyonce. I also know that a lot of this is Beehive, and people that will follow Beyonce if she decided to do an album of the alphabet. And, you know, and everybody would love that and be very excited about it. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm hoping that people will stick around.
Mm-hmm. What are the things about the country music industry that you feel need to change?
I think that a real concerted effort to try to retain this audience, and when I say this audience, I mean a Black audience, needs to happen. I don't feel like it has happened. I think they've done studies and things like that, but like no real effort to like really, not just shallow surface wise, but like really atone for the way that people feel at country festivals, like not feeling safe, the Confederate flag issue, like a lot of that stuff, like real conversation needs to happen. And I also think that a real conversation needs to be had about the way radio is. Because unfortunately today, if you are a fan of Beyonce and you love Texas Hold'em and you're excited about all this Black country music that you just found, unfortunately, once Texas Hold'em plays, all you're going to hear after that is white men, the occasional Black man, and some white women. You are not going to hear another Black woman until Texas Hold'em plays again.
I was struck by the fact that you said that part of your upbringing on, growing up on country music was a reflection of the fact that your parents are both from the South, and that music is like part of their identity. And part of me wonders whether this moment with country music, I think, broadening in some ways and more of an interest of Black audiences in listening to country music is a reflection of, like, reclaiming some of that Southern heritage. And I would be curious to hear you talk about some of that and also about the contributions that Black people have been making to country music during this whole time, whether or not they've been recognized by the Billboard charts or by Nashville or what have you.
Black people have been at the root of country music from its inception, its creation. I wouldn't sit here and say that it is a Black art form, but we definitely had a hand in it. That's one of the things I love about country music is the fact that it is a result of this experiment that we call the United States. It would not exist without enslaved people. It would not exist without Hispanic people. It would not exist without Native American people. And it wouldn't exist without European people. Everybody had to come together to make this. I do think that this resurgence in interest, right, especially in this moment, is us remembering our history at a time when history is being whitewashed and erased and outlawed. And I think the more that we listen, and the more that we are real with ourselves that, you know, everybody likes this music. Everybody, you walk into a room with a bunch of Black people and you start singing, I'm gonna love you forever. Everybody can sing it back to you forever and ever. Amen. Like, cause that it's just a part of what we do. So like, I love it. Like I love when we remember who we are. And yeah, I'm for it. Yeehaw agenda.
Kreese Palmer, thank you so much. This was lovely.
Thank you.
Kreese Palmer is a musician and host of the Apple Music radio show Color Me Country. Her most recent studio album is called Revival. And if you have been listening to Beyoncé's new album nonstop, we would love to hear what you think about it. Send us an email at postreports@washpost.com with your thoughts. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Peter Bresnan and Taylor White, with help from Renny Svernovsky. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Lucy Perkins. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.